Chapter 19. Moon. William Romaine's case that not only solar but also lunar connections were mediated through geometry in the alignments of Cahokia is strengthened by the fact that other significantly older earthwork sites, most of which were destroyed by development in the 19th and 20th centuries, were built in the Mississippi River Basin, incorporating complex geometries based almost exclusively on lunar alignments. Two of the most significant such sites to have survived, at least in part, into the 21st century, are the High Bank Works and Newark Earthworks, both in Ohio. High Bank Works is located near the town of Chillicothe, about 40 miles northeast of Serpent Mound, and Newark Earthworks stands about 60 miles further to the northeast, near the town of Newark. Both are true geoglyphs in the Amazonian sense, being formed by embankments and ditches set out on such a gigantic scale that their shape is not evident at ground level and can only be discerned clearly from the air. Both are dominated by immense octagon-circle combinations linked by short causeways amid assemblies of other geometrical figures. Both are currently thought to date between AD 250 and 400. Both are attributed to a culture that archaeologists have named the Hopewell, after a certain Captain M.C. Hopewell, who happened to own a farm in the right place when excavations began. Newark and Highbank were first professionally surveyed in the mid-19th century, when numerous mounds, most subsequently leveled for ploughing or industrial purposes, were reported to be situated within the geometrical earthworks. It may therefore be relevant to recall at this point that many of the Amazonian geoglyphs described in Chapter 15 also contain mounds. For example, 11 arranged in a circle within an immense enclosure in the Upper Tapajos Basin, the two high mounds standing like towers at the southwestern entrance of the trapezoidal earthwork at Fazenda Colorada, the 25 mounds adjoining Fazenda Ikiri II, and the 10 surviving mounds of Coqueiral. Whereas no archaeoastronomical survey of the Amazonian earthworks has yet been attempted, Cahokia and Serpent Mound have both been subject to intense scrutiny. Meanwhile, at Newark and High Bank, a series of studies since the 1980s have revealed a complex symphony of geometry and astronomy encoding not only familiar solar alignments, but also, as we're about to hear, much more subtle and esoteric conjunctions of heaven and earth, concerned with the complex dance along the horizon of the rising and setting moon. PCBs. Newark and Highbank have an almost technological feel to them, resembling gigantic printed circuit boards or wiring diagrams from the innards of some immense and ineffable instrument. It's interesting, therefore, that Bradley Lepper, currently curator of archaeology with the Ohio History Connection, believes they may originally have been conceived by their designers as the components in a monumental engine for world renewal, a vast machine or device designed and built to unleash primordial forces. At both sites, the principal geoglyph combines a circle with an octagon. And in both cases, these figures are formed by large earthen embankments, as much as 12 meters wide at the base and typically about 1.7 meters high. A striking similarity of general design connects the octagon circle theme of Newark and Highbank with the Amazonian geoglyph, reported in Chapter 15, of Santa Isabel. Although the latter is less geometrically exact than the Ohio examples, this is by no means always the rule, since both regions exhibit numbers of extremely precise and numbers of more mediocre earthworks. The strict lines of Ohio's Newark octagon enclose an area of 50 acres, and its eight walls have an average length of 167.7 meters. The adjoining circle, known since the 19th century as the Observatory Circle, encloses an area of 20 acres and has a diameter of 321.3 meters. A resurvey of the site carried out with modern instruments in 1982 revealed that the midline of the embankment walls deviates by no more than 1.2 meters at any place from a perfect circle of diameter 321.3 meters. A perfect circle of this diameter would have a circumference of 1,009.4 meters, whereas the actual circle has a circumference of 1,008.6 meters. Thus, it is evident that the observatory circle very closely approximates a true circle. Located 2 kilometers southeast of the observatory circle is a second larger but less geometrically perfect circle known as the Great Circle and formerly as the Fairground Circle, since it was used as the site of the Licking County Fairgrounds from 1854 to 1933. It encloses an area of 30 acres, and though much depleted by misuse and the passage of time, its earthwork walls today, varying between 1.5 meters and 4.3 meters in height and between 11 meters and 17 meters in width, still gives a sense of the enormity of the original enterprise. At its center are the remnants of a three-lobed mound, usually referred to as Eagle Mound, because many visitors have seen in it a resemblance to a bird with outstretched wings. Archaeologists, however, regard it as a series of conjoined mounds, rather than a specific effigy form. The diameter of the Great Circle, at 365.9 meters, is of the same order of magnitude as the Neolithic henges in the British Isles. Stonehenge at 110 meters is smaller, but Avebury at approximately 420 meters is larger. Moreover, just like Avebury and many of the Amazonian earthworks reviewed in Chapter 16, a striking feature of Newark's Great Circle is the massive ditch, as much as 12.5 meters wide and 4 meters deep, that runs inside its embankment walls. Indeed, such a ditch, within rather than outside a circular embankment, is the very definition of a henge. Alongside its circles, and an integral part of the same enormous complex, to the other elements of which it was joined by causeways, Newark in its prime possessed a square enclosure, nearly geometrically perfect, with sides averaging 931 feet in length. Almost nothing of it remains today, but fortunately, enough was intact when it was surveyed in the 19th century, first by Squire and Davis, and later by Cyrus Thomas of the Bureau of Ethnology, to establish its measures exactly. These and subsequent surveys have revealed not only that the perimeter of the square earthwork is precisely equal to the circumference of the Great Circle, but also, as Bradley Lepper notes, that its area is equal to the area of the observatory circle. In these clearly deliberate and carefully thought-through harmonies, Lepper rightly finds indications of the remarkable sophistication of the geometry incorporated into the architecture of the Newark earthworks. William Romaine is more specific. In his view, the creators of this extraordinary and in some ways rather otherworldly site were intrigued by the variety of possible relationships between a circle and a square. The idea that seems to be expressed is that for every circular enclosure, a corresponding square can be related to the circle by geometric means. Squaring the circle, constructing a square with the same area as a given circle, was, of course, a geometrical exercise of great interest to the master mathematicians of ancient Babylon, Egypt, and Greece. The dominant reference frame of modern archaeology does not encourage us to believe that any native North Americans 2,000 years ago would have possessed the necessary knowledge and skills to perform such an exercise. Yet clearly they did, for the proof is there at Newark, not scratched on some handy-sized clay tablet or papyrus, but set out with high precision on the ground in an assembly of truly gigantic and mysterious earthworks. Many different variations on the same theme, which there is not space to review here, are to be found at other hopeful sites in Ohio. For example, a square-circle combination that formerly existed in Pike County. Fortunately, it was surveyed by Squire and Davis in 1848, and their rendering, in Figure 11 of Ancient Monuments of the Mississippi Valley, shows it to have been very similar in concept and plan, and indeed in size, to the earthwork at Jacosa in the Amazon described in Chapter 15. The two figures are not identical, but they appear to demonstrate the identical geometrical principle. From Chapter 15, the listener will also recall the recent discovery of a squared circle complex within the Great Henge at Avebury in the British Isles. Are we to resort, once again, to the archaeological coverall of coincidence, to explain the constant repetition and replication of the same astronomical and geometrical constructs in earthworks as far apart in space and time as Avebury, Newark, and Jacosa? Or could it be that some guided and intentional process, as yet undetected by archaeology, was underway behind the scenes of prehistory. The connection to High Bank. We've seen how the diameter of the nearly geometrically perfect observatory circle at Newark is 321.3 meters, 1,054 feet. Astronomer Ray Hively and philosopher Robert Horne of Indiana's Earlham College, whose comprehensive work at Newark and High Bank in the 1980s provided the foundation for all subsequent studies, realized that the same length of 321.3 meters had also been used by the builders to lay out the octagon. The conclusion suggested by the geometry of the observatory circle octagon combination is that both figures have been carefully and skillfully constructed from the same fundamental length. This unit of measure, now known by the unfortunate yet strangely appropriate acronym OCD for Observatory Circle Diameter, was also deployed at High Bank, which, as Hively and Horne remind us, is the only other circle-octagon combination known to have been constructed by the Hopewell. It cannot be a coincidence, then, that High Bank turns out to conform to a geometric pattern based on a fundamental length of 0.998 OCD. Nor is the connection between these two sites limited to their shared unit of measure. Perhaps most striking of all is the fact, noted by archaeologist Bradley Lepper, that the main axis of High Bank works, that is a line projected through the center of the circle and the octagon, bears a direct relationship to the axis of Newark's observatory circle and octagon. Although built more than 60 miles apart, the axis of High Bank works is oriented at precisely 90 degrees to that of Newark earthworks. This suggests a deliberate attempt to link these sites through geometry and astronomy. In my view, it more than merely suggests. Given that these are the only two sites in North America with circle-octagon combination earthworks, given that the circles are 99.8% identical in size, and given their precise 90-degree orientation to one another, a quite remarkable feat of surveying across a great span of country, I think we can safely say that the designers did intend a deliberate connection here. Lepper himself makes a strong case that this connection might have been more than symbolic when he presents evidence for the former existence of a causewayed road, with some stretches of its parallel walls still in place as late as the mid-19th century. He calls it the Great Hopewell Road, and speculates that it was perhaps a pilgrim route that once ran between Newark and High Bank. As at Newark, a circle-octagon combination forms the dominant glyph at High Bank, and there are adjacent figures and causewayed avenues. When Squire and Davis surveyed the site in the 19th century, there has been massive destruction since. They reported that the walls of the High Bank octagon were very bold, and where they have been least subjected to cultivation are between 11 and 12 feet in height by about 50 feet base. The wall of the circle is much less, nowhere measuring over 4 or 5 feet in altitude. Despite its once bold walls, the High Bank octagon, enclosing 18 acres, is a much smaller figure than the Newark octagon, which, as we've heard, encloses 50 acres. Why, since otherwise the circle-octagon motifs of the two sites are so similar, since their circles are of identical size, and since it seems the earthwork makers did nothing by chance, should there be this marked reduction in scale of the High Bank octagon? The answer, as we'll hear, has to do with eerily precise, indeed scientific, observations of the moon. Sky knowledge. Like other sacred sites scattered around the world, the geometrical mounds and earthworks of North America don't give up their secrets easily. They have ways of grabbing your attention, but they're going to force you to do some work before they allow you to understand them. Thus, for example, getting to grips properly with Serpent Mound requires knowledge of what a solstice is, and of how the rising and setting points of the sun change according to a predictable cycle throughout the year. Such knowledge, archaeologists argue, would have had immediate utility in the pre-industrial world, reminding farmers, in the words of Ecclesiastes, that for everything there is a season, a time to plant, and a time to pluck that which is planted. As a motive for the memorialization of solstitial and equinoctial alignments, however, The arguments in favor of a practical, immediate agricultural payoff don't adequately account for the enormous effort involved in the construction of many of the sites. After all, the same calendrical functions could have been realized almost as effectively and much less expensively with pairs of aligned poles. The notion that a reliable agricultural calendar was the primary motive for sky watching also fails to explain why we find the same focus on the rising and setting sun on the solstices and the equinoxes in distinctly pre-agricultural sites, such as Pinhal do Pilão in the Amazon, dating back more than 13,000 years. Likewise, though they can only have been the product of detailed observations of the heavens and would have required meticulous record-keeping over many generations, the lunar alignments manifested in the great earthworks at Newark and Highbank have no obvious practical function in terms of harvests, or indeed, of any other utilitarian pursuit. Once again, though, what they do require of those who seek deeper knowledge of them is a study of the heavens. Nothing beats direct observation of the sky over the course of the year, except observing it over the course of many years. But these days, excellent, free astronomical software can speed up and simplify the learning task by showing us the exact rising points of the sun and the moon at any location and over any interval we choose. If we make use of such software to observe the behavior of the moon over, say, a period of a century, we will quickly notice that its rising and setting points along the eastern and western horizons are locked to a cycle, shifting from farthest north to farthest south and back to farthest north again every month. As more time passes, however, we will also observe that these monthly boundaries on the moon's rising and setting points aren't fixed from year to year, but instead widen and narrow over an 18.6-year cycle. If they are at their widest, maximum extreme today, then they will be at their narrowest, minimum extreme in 9.3 years, and at their widest again, 9.3 years after that. 8 prominent directions are therefore implicated in these celestial events. 4 target the maximum and minimum monthly boundaries north of east and the maximum and minimum monthly boundaries south of east, between which the moon can rise during its 18.6-year cycle. The other 4 do the same for moonset on the western horizon. On each occasion, as it reaches one of its extremes, the moon's constant motion stops, literally comes to a standstill, before it reverses the direction of its oscillation for the next 9.3 years. The geometry of the Newark earthworks, and of Highbank too, turns out to be very closely fitted to these obscure celestial events, known to astronomers as lunar standstills, knowledge of which would appear to have no practical contribution to make to the necessities of everyday life. Newark's Lunar Code. It's largely thanks to Ray Hively and Robert Horne that we know of these lunar connections at all. When they began work at Newark in 1975, their purpose was to conduct a field exercise in data collection and analysis for an undergraduate interdisciplinary course. Although cosmology and the astronomical knowledge of prehistoric and ancient cultures were within the scope of the course, they make clear that they did not expect to find any particular geometrical or astronomical pattern at Newark. Indeed, given the difficulty of showing that any such pattern was intentional rather than fortuitous, we doubted any persuasive hypothesis regarding design of the earthworks could be formed. To their surprise, however, as they admitted in 2016, our continued analysis has revealed repetitive patterns of earthwork and topographical features oriented or aligned to the extreme rise and set points of both the sun and the moon on the horizon. These alignments, combined with the massive scale, geometrical symmetry, and regularity of the earthen enclosures, suggest that the Newark earthworks were built to record, celebrate, and connect with celestial actors or large-scale forces that appear to govern relations among earth, sky, and the human mind. In their initial study, published in the journal Archaeoastronomy in 1982, Hively and Horne did not recognize any solar alignments at Newark. What grabbed their attention instead was the intricate cat's cradle of lunar alignments uncovered by their detective work. Some were obvious, indeed unmissable, once the lunar concerns of the site were admitted. For example, the fact that the avenue axis of the octagon points to the maximum northern extreme rising point of the moon with an error of 0.2 degrees. Such an error, amounting to less than 0.2 of a single degree, represents remarkable precision for any epoch, and far exceeds the level of science generally assumed by archaeologists to have existed in the pre-Columbian Americas. Moreover, the avenue axis and four sides of the octagon mark 5 of the 8 extreme lunar rise set points with a mean accuracy of 0.5 degrees. The three remaining alignments are accurate to within 0.4 degrees, 0.7 degrees, and 0.8 degrees. Hively and Horn reinforce their case with another observation. The four sides of the Newark octagon that are not aligned to significant lunar events form closely parallel pairs and are highly symmetrical. By contrast, the four sides that do align to lunar standstills are neither parallel nor symmetrical. The obvious deduction to be made from this is that the geometrical symmetry of the octagon was deliberately distorted to achieve more accurate lunar alignments. Moreover, the requirements of 1, octagonal symmetry, and of 2, alignment with lunar extrema uniquely define the Newark octagon. Of the infinity of possible octagons which could have been constructed at this site, the one we find is precisely the one which matches the lunar extrema most closely. In fact, we have been unable to design an equilateral polygon with 8 or fewer sides which incorporates the same lunar points more efficiently and accurately than does the Newark octagon. Sun and Moon at High Bank. The great contribution of Hively and Horn's 1982 paper in Archaeoastronomy was that it demonstrated how precisely and how cleverly Newark celebrates and embraces the lunar standstills. In a follow-up paper published in the same journal in 1984, the same investigators go on to prove that the High Bank structures embody equally unequivocal alignments to the extreme north and south rise points of the moon. And just as at Newark, where deliberate asymmetries were introduced into the side lengths and angles of the octagon to achieve more perfect lunar alignments, so too we find that one of the 8 walls of High Bank's octagon is 16% longer than it should be to preserve perfect geometrical symmetry. This error, however, alters the angle to the neighboring vertex, thus opening up an alignment to the southern extreme moonrise at minimum standstill within a margin of just 0.6 degrees. If the wall had been the correct symmetrical length, no lunar alignment would have been possible. A second such error facilitates an alignment with the southern extreme moonset, again at minimum standstill. A further alignment, in this case made possible by deviations in linearity, targets the northern extreme moonset at maximum standstill. Clearly, therefore, High Bank and Newark have much in common, and in some ways seem almost like twins. Why then, as we asked earlier, does the octagon of one of these twins enclose 50 acres, while the octagon of the other encloses just 18 acres? The answer offered by Hively and Horn is that not only does the 50-acre Newark octagon match the lunar extrema more closely than any other possible octagon, but also that it was designed to do so within the specific latitude band, measuring 44.5 kilometers from north to south, in which Newark is located. In other words, the purpose of accurately aligning the earthwork to the lunar standstills would not have been served if the Newark octagon, like the circle, had been reproduced with an exact duplicate at High Bank more than 90 kilometers to the south. The 18-acre figure with different vertex angles that we find at High Bank is perfectly suited to the task at High Bank's latitude. Among other differences between the two sites, perhaps the most notable is that no alignment to any significant solar event, whether to the equinoxes or to the solstices or to the so-called cross-quarter days in between, has yet been satisfactorily identified at Newark in the earthworks themselves. But there's a context to this. Recent research by Hively and Horn has raised the intriguing possibility that the very reason Newark's earthworks are where they are is that 4 prominent high-elevation overlooks in the surrounding landscape serve as natural front and back sites, targeting sunrise and sunset on the winter and summer solstices. It's unlikely to be an accident that the point of intersection of these natural alignments lies in the central region of the earthworks and is equidistant within 2% from the centers of the observatory circle and the great circle. Just as with its latitude, therefore, though the matter cannot be proved, the choice of Newark's natural setting feels designed and deliberate. Meanwhile, at High Bank, Hively and Horn's 1984 study not only confirmed key lunar alignments to southern extreme moonrise, southern extreme moonset, and northern extreme moonset, as we've heard, but also to the northern extreme moonrise and to the southern extreme moonset, both at maximum standstill. In addition, the summer solstice sunrise is targeted within 0.5 degrees by wall 1 to 2, while the alignment 13 to 2 targets the winter solstice sunrise. The same familiar memes of cosmic mystery and geometric magic that manifest in earlier sites such as Serpent Mound and later sites such as Cahokia. We've heard that these memes can be traced in the Amazon at least as far back as Pinal do Pilau some 13,000 years ago. Before Cahokia, before Newark and High Bank, before Serpent Mound, how far back can we follow their trail in North America?